I've never really spoken about this.
Do you think you ever experienced a mental health issue?
Like, I legitimately don't think I've ever spoken about it.
When I think of Greg Bird, I think of a fucking unit strutting down the field, taking no prisoners, but, you know, pretty soft heart underneath.
When I'm down, I'm jumping in my car and drive and park somewhere.
And then what?
Getting out of that pain. What's it going to take to stop it? Taking the doctors, and they've suspected I had part bipolar and things like that. And because the highs are high, and you enjoy them and you're happy, but the lows are really low.
As you're sitting here talking to me, do you feel weak?
Loneliness?
Mm.
Loneliness is probably a big one, because I don't want to ring anyone. I don't want to burden anyone. You know, sometimes I wish I could ring someone. Pretty much locked myself inside for about a month.
Wow.
I didn't leave. There was like cameras sitting outside my house. Like, they were taking photos of me if I went to the window through the crack in the blinds.
Does that just pour gasoline on any existing mental health issue?
Yeah, I think it does, especially the way I've dealt with situations. It's really strange. I haven't actually thought about this until you asked me this
fucking question. A few new insights today, Greggy. Maybe what people were seeing as anger was actually passion.
That's the way I see it.
What's the real Greg Bird feeling at that moment?
Now you got to go figure it out. What are you going to do now?
All right, we're on it.
I wonder what you mean when you use the word I.
Take a break.
We have an aversion to ourselves and to what's happening inside us.
I've been very interested in this problem for a long, long time.
Something settles.
Welcome back to another episode. Today's amazing guest is Greg Bird. Greg was a professional rugby league player for an impressive 17 years, including representing New South Wales in State of Origin and being selected to play for Australia. He hung up his boots in 2019, and in this interview, we get into some topics about mental health that he hasn't really ever spoken about before, and it was a real honour to hear his journey in more detail. Remember, and a reminder to me included, not everything is what it seems on the outside, and this story is certainly testament to that. I hope you get as much out of it as I did, with a real man's man actually showing some humanity underneath the armor and brave exterior.
You don't have to turn my microphone up because my voice is shit out.
No.
Maybe we will actually.
Really?
We just turn number two up just a tiny bit, or just pick it up a bit.
Yes. Yeah, right. My voice is awful.
You're good. Enjoy.
Where'd that come from?
I got an elbow in the throat. I'll try to speak a bit clearer. Yeah, I got an elbow in the throat playing over in the Super League, and it just ended my vocal ability.
Fuck me.
Yeah, it was awful. I used to like love singing and shit like that.
No way.
Yeah, now it's awful. It's terrible.
So did it like break something structural?
It didn't break it. They thought, because I couldn't speak for like 3 months. At the time, they thought I might have ruptured my trachea. If you do that, you basically have to get rushed into surgery and get prepared, otherwise you can't breathe. But it just swelled up. And one side just scarred. So your vocal cords that vibrate. Because wrapped in scar tissue, it doesn't move. So the other one has to go work double time to get all the way across to it. So it just comes across crumbly. Yeah. Shit, but.
Couldn't speak for 3 months.
Yeah. My missus wasn't very happy about it.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah. She's not happy now. She's like, what? I'm like, listen to me.
Yeah.
She's like, I can't hear. Yeah, it's hard work. But this like probably the, like in the grand scheme of things compared to, you know, so many other rugby league players. It's not too bad.
You get pretty bashed up.
It's blokes that are just like in wheelchairs, and you know, Alex McKinnon in it,
yeah,
literally in a wheelchair from Newey. So,
mate, thank you so much for taking the time. Like, really, really appreciate it. It would have been so easy for you to meet a dude at a conference and then get asked on a potty, and then life gets in the way. I don't take for granted that you're giving me an hour.
I really, really enjoyed your presentation. It was cool.
Thanks, cool. Man.
Yeah, it was good.
No, it's
good to hear a good story.
Heartfelt thank you. You're a dad.
I am. I am father of two little girls. I had my first daughter 2016, just before I went to France. And then I had my second little girl over in Perpignan in the south of France. It was good.
What does being a dad mean to you?
I think it's just someone you can look after. And I always think you look after your wife, but she can look after herself. She's a pretty independent woman, my wife. So having someone that basically depends, everything that is in their life depends on you.
Mm.
So you got to try to, you know, shape them and, you know, try to bring them up to be the best they can be.
So it's the aspect of caring about someone other than yourself. And you hear a lot of people, particularly a lot of men when they have daughters, there's a certain softness that comes out and I guess a love that you never knew you had. Is that your experience?
Yeah, it is very different. I think your masculinity, your man, you want to have a boy, you know, make him exactly like you. but for me, I wanted a girl. I wanted a little girl. I grew up in a pretty big family. I was the oldest of four, and then my mum remarried and she had another two. But so I've always sort of been sort of an older person looking over my family a little bit. But to have my own little girl was a good. My second one was probably, I was hoping was a boy, but my little Finn, yeah, she's seven now. She goes to school just down the road here in Bull Beach. And, she's a pretty special little thing.
Can you think of a memory or a moment that when you think about being a dad, like something that really sticks out for you is like, when did you stop and go, fuck, this is pretty cool?
I think for me it's just the gestures.
Mm.
Like she'll just come up and give you a cuddle. Like she might see that you're upset about something, might see that my wife's having a go at me or riding me about something, and she'll just come to me and give you a cuddle.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the little things that I like, just it's the things that aren't said, the unspoken word, as they say. Those empathetic movements that sort of make you feel a little bit special.
They just love it.
Maybe you've put something in there that, or something's already there, it comes through genetically that just works.
You, speaking about like family and being a dad, I think you mentioned a couple of times in previous occasions that you realized later in life that there was some dysfunction in your earlier childhood. What is that word? How does that word play out in actuality when you reflect back on your childhood?
Well, I don't know whether there was dysfunction in my early childhood, but later on, there definitely was. My father was an alcoholic, and my parents pretty much separated because of that.
Mm.
And then he sort of went into a downhill spiral a little bit. I was off playing rugby league, so it wasn't something that I guess affected me at the time. He was doing what he was doing. I was doing what I was doing. I wasn't in the household for a lot of the time, where the family was sort of deteriorating a little bit. My sisters took it a little bit harder than I did, because I was sort of had my eyes set on the future, playing NRL and moving out of home and doing this and that. So, but you know, looking back now in hindsight, you know, it was pretty dysfunctional. It's sad that it ended the way it did. He passed away, had a heart attack.
Mm.
You know, the alcoholism sort of takes over, and regular health just comes second fiddle, really, for the old man, which was unfortunate because he was a good man.
Yeah, he sounds like I assume that he meant a lot to you, and I've seen you speak about that before. I want to touch on that in a little bit, because 2016 was kind of a big year for you all round. I think it was the year your dad passed and you became a dad. And at that time you were stood down from the Titans, is that right?
Yep. Yeah, so I had a baby in April, my first child, and there was an issue at the Titans. They were looking to move me on. And then they got a reason, a nothing incident. One of my friends got in a fight and I stood in to help him at a bar, and they hung us out to dry, basically said, we're going to get rid of you, you're going to go overseas. You can go overseas, but you're not playing here. So, yeah, I left, arrived in France, was there for 2 nights, and then on the third morning, get a phone call from my sister saying dad's just had a heart attack. It was pretty shattering, obviously, for obvious reasons. I flew home, dealt with all the family stuff, went back, and then about a month later, my grandma died, my father's mother. Which hit me again, and then dealt with that, and then about a month later, my dog died. And I know you think, a lot of people think that it's just a dog, your dad or your grandma. It's sort of, that really knocked me about as well. So it was the triple for the football. You know, for me, you know, it upset me that I had to go to the Super League to finish my career. But at the end of the day, that was always planning to do that anyway. So it wasn't the be all and end all to finish it out in Australia. It was a few deaths. In a pretty quick succession was definitely shocking.
Yeah, man, it's such an interesting contrast that there was like life and then death.
Yeah.
In a very short space of time, and that's a lot for anyone to process. I know that, you know, it's a lot. It was shocking you said that, but can you take me a little bit deeper into that? You've your old man who, by a lot of accounts, is someone you really look up to. Your grandma, did she play a bit of an active role when you were younger?
Yeah, she was the sort of overseeing figure in our family, really. She was young. Like, she was old, but she was young at heart. We spent a lot of time together when we were young, like holidays and things like that. We're always at their house. Up in the bush country, New South Wales, in Tamworth, south side of Tamworth. So yeah, it was definitely hard to sort of process. I guess for my grandmother, she was old. People do pass. That's a fact of life. So, but yeah, to have them all in quick succession was hard on me personally. It was hard on my family, and I think that's probably why I held it together. A lot. I haven't really thought about it. When my dad died, I'm the oldest of four, as I said, for my dad. So I was sort of trying to, you know, be there for my brother and my two sisters, and then Nan. You know, there was lots of other family members there, and sort of relied on each other. I actually didn't even wasn't even able to come back, because we were playing football at that stage. But then when my dog died, it was pretty just much just me. It was me and my wife. I think that might have been why.
Because it was the first time you were allowed to feel it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was the first time where I didn't have to, I wasn't really trying to be supportive to anyone else. I was just took it all in. And I think maybe at that stage, a lot of the other emotions from the other two
finally able to let out through that.
I think that's what happened.
And as someone, like, when I think of Greg Bird, I think of a fucking unit strutting down the field, taking no prisoners. But, you know, as I've gotten to know you a little bit, and I'm lucky enough to get to know you more now, there's, you know, a pretty soft heart underneath there. I don't mean to take away from the bad boy image that you've done so hard in creating.
Yeah, mate, it's...
But I mean, like, when you had that moment, and can you be honest with me and tell me, like,
how does that play out? Your dog's died, your old man's died, your nan's died. What's the real Greg Bird feeling at that moment?
It was just like anything. Grief, you're angry,
anger.
My first thing, I blame my wife for not letting me bring the dog to France.
Yeah, so projection outwards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which was stupid because we couldn't take the dog to France. And I was just looking for an outlet, really.
Yeah.
Looking for someone to blame.
Yeah.
Blame my mom because the dog was in my mom's care. Blame everyone at that moment. You look back and think about it, it's stupid. It's just, psychological. Warfare that you're playing on yourself in your own head, because as I said, it was all for me to deal with at that time.
You need to put your pain somewhere, and sometimes it's so fucking much. And given the fact that you just come off what you did, it's like the cup's overfilling, and you wouldn't have intentionally tried to do so. But those who are around you and who love you, you're almost in your own way being like, "I need you to hold this for me," but probably not articulating it in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you're just looking for someone, a reason,
a purpose,
like a reason to be angry and be upset. And, it's no one's fault. It's no one's fault.
Do you couple those two things often? I think a lot of men, myself included, until I did a metric fuck ton of therapy, that anger and sadness were like next door neighbors for me, and sometimes I couldn't even differentiate it. And I realized that a lot of time that I was actually being angry, I wasn't angry, I was sad, and I didn't know how to express it. Do you relate to that?
A little bit, probably not so much the anger.
Mm.
Probably sadness and passion for me. Like, I know they seem like the opposite ends of the spectrum, but yeah. I find the things you're passionate about, the things you really care about, when they're good they're great, and when they're not good, it's just like an off the cliff.
Mm.
It's like, as for me, that's sort of how I think. I don't really get angry. I look angry on the field.
Mm.
I play angry. I used to play angry, but yeah, I'm not really the type of person to get overly angry. That's more just an image.
Yeah, when I'm around you, you have a very calm demeanor.
Yeah,
like you're an approachable person, and again, not to ruin the bad boy image, but a kind person.
Yeah, I try to be.
Yeah, and so like thinking about the footy field and just kind of pulling on the thread around like emotion, maybe what people were seeing as anger was actually passion.
That's the way I see it.
Yeah,
intent. Passion, competitiveness. I just wanted to win, basically. And I guess when someone's got that sort of attitude that they'll do anything it takes to win, it probably comes across pretty forceful and maybe a little bit angry. But, I wouldn't think I'm an angry person.
Has that want to win always been part of who you are?
Yeah.
Do you remember basically your earliest memory where you're like, I fucking love winning?
Yeah, it's all about winning. I was the same when I was playing cricket in the backyard when I was 4 years old, or when you're playing Monopoly with the family and someone's cheating and you're up in the table. Like, it's win or nothing, really, for me.
Where do you think that comes from?
I don't know. Because my dad doesn't seem to be like that. Mm. Never seemed to be like that. He was always really calm and calming influence. I'm sure he was competitive in his own right, but I never really saw that. I don't know. I've got no idea. I've got uncles who are pretty competitive on my mother's side, but I don't know. It's something that's frustrating because daughters and kids, you sort of got to take the tone down a little bit. Trying to blitz them on board games and things like that all the time.
Well, I think as well, because you're a big dude, I would imagine that it's quite easy for the little girls to get intimidated, like your daughters, because dad's a big guy. So does that ever come into the fold?
Not really. I don't think they see me that way.
They see you as a teddy bear?
They see me as a bad teddy bear, yeah. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I think my eldest is a little bit more cluey. My youngest is fearless.
Yeah.
So there's no way I can intimidate her or anything. She's
fearless, that's a word. That feels right. Passionate feels right, but fearless feels even more so. Like when I think about the way that like you would run into tackles is maybe the way that you've approached your career and that never say die attitude. It's like, it's almost as if you're not scared of any of the bad outcomes. And I don't know if it's because you haven't thought about them or whether you're just at peace with bad shit happening. Like before we got on air, you're like, you know, I had the throat accident, but you know, there's bad shit happens to rugby players. And it's like when you start something, you're already at peace with what could go wrong.
Yeah. I enjoy it. I'll take the good with the bad. Like winning's good. Like NRL's great. Being able to do what I did for 18 years at the top level, you know, play rep footy and all this and that. Yeah, that's amazing. I'm very lucky and very fortunate. Obviously, there's always going to be some negatives that come into it.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, it's hard to say you regret things. Obviously, I regret some of the probably the off-the-field things, but when it comes to the paddock, there's nothing really I look back and regret the decision that I made, because the decision I made would have been to try to do whatever took the win. It wouldn't have been a soft decision. It would have been second guessing a decision. It was always, if it comes off, it comes off. If it doesn't, I'll take the hit. I took a few hits, coaches over the years, when something I tried, something I saw, didn't come off. But that's life. That's
what. What does losing mean to you when you think about losing? What comes up?
I don't know. It's not. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to really even think about, to really to articulate what losing means.
Non-negotiable.
I just really didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
It's not about dominating people, or I just like to win. I get frustrated when people win, beat me, and you know, the people who layer up and talk and all that. I never did that. I don't do that when we play board games, or do that when we kick a soccer ball, or don't do that when you're having a swimming race or anything. Like, it's not something. So when that, I don't know, just not losing, not failing. And I was the same with education as well. I put everything to make sure, like a little bit of a perfectionist when it comes to that sort of stuff. It wasn't. Nothing was really half-assed. It was sort of, I was doing an assignment, I was doing an essay, I was doing my maths, it was, you know, committing to the work and making sure I did all the preparation and go at it 100%. So to not fail, to not lose to an extent. But
so do you think, this might seem like the same thing, but I'm interested, do you think it's you love winning or you hate losing? Which one?
I think I hate losing. Yeah. I think that's probably it. Yeah. Yeah, losing's not fun. I don't think losing's fun for anyone.
Nah.
For me, I think people normalize losing now a little bit. I think the world's gone a little bit too PC when it comes to, you know, things are supposed to be fun and, you know, we need to give achievement awards to everybody, no first and second and third place. I just don't believe that. I know there's a lot of, you know, psychologists and theories to base where they're putting that through schools now and things like that. But for me, to achieve the most in the world, to achieve the most, there's grades. You do studies, there's grades. I mean, you get 100, you get 90, you get ABC, however you want to score it. In sports, it's the same. There's winners and losers. And hopefully you can teach people to try to, if they don't win, I teach my daughter all the time, when she doesn't win, what are you going to do? And she goes, I'm going to work harder. And that was what I did. And that's, I think that when you take the competition away, there's nothing to work harder for. So I think people should always be trying to work harder. you know, listen to blokes like Billy Slater and think like that talk, and Billy's top of his game, and he was at the top of his game playing fullback for Queensland, Australia, Melbourne. And he just said that he always worked, tried to train to work harder, to be better. He was the best. You know, I was always the same, never at his level, never at his skill level in the sense of what he could do in a game. I was just trying to break him up.
Different position as well.
Yeah, different position. Yeah. He's fast and skillful and on a bit of everything.
Yeah. Utility. Usually when someone has a like repeated pattern of behavior, and I'm just picking up on the perfectionism thing, that could be taken as a negative word. Let's just say like strong work ethic. Usually when that happens, you see it somewhere else first. Do you know where you picked that up? Somewhere in your family? Was it your friends?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know. Like my mum had a strong work ethic. My mum pretty much supported our whole family from when my dad had a accident when he was younger. So he was on a pension. So we sort of, you know, we got everything we needed, but he couldn't work. We got everything we needed from my mum's job. And I'm sure in relative terms, she wasn't on massive money, but we grew up with four kids and a beautiful house, and we got everything we wanted. We played all the sport. We never were without anything.
She's a superhero.
Yeah, so probably
Wow. Probably
my mum would be the work ethic style of it. It's something that you don't think about. For me, like when you asked me then, I was like, you try to play it in your mind, where maybe it come from. Run through scenarios in your head of people who are in your life, but you don't really acknowledge it as much as you probably should.
So maybe... You might, as you age, more so, but at the time it was probably pretty significant to you that you're looking at a mum who's like constantly giving her all in order to provide and protect and do her bit. That has become part of who you are.
Yeah, I think so. I think, well, that's, you go back to being a parent at the start of the conversation. You sort of, you pick up things and you try to put down things to your siblings that they're going to be able to then pass on. Mm. That's something that I guess is passed on through me. And hopefully we can, keep, there's sort of some of the positive things that go on that we sort of have in our lives going through to the next generation.
I was raised by a single mum for up until I was probably 8. And I know for sure that a huge part of who I am is because of watching her, like similar work ethic to your mum, just never say die attitude, went from a horse riding instructor, as you heard from my talk, to IT sales and everything. But it's funny, I forgot something she told me a lot recently until someone asked me, what's a quote your mum used to tell you a lot? And I'm like, fuck, that wasn't very healthy. She used to say like, near enough is never, ever good enough. And you could also argue that it's healthy.
so we go back to talk to the about achievement awards and winning and losing. That resonates with me.
Yeah. It's
something that's good. Because you're not trying to get close to something. You're trying to get what you want.
Yeah. And so I think it's the reason maybe, in as I'm reflecting real time, the reason why I said it's not healthy is actually just because I already knew that internally. If I was someone who was a slacker and lazy and blah, 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 I think a good kick up the ass with something like that could be good. But I felt as though I was already driving myself to just like perfectionist tendencies. And then those comments sometimes would make me feel like, well, when the fuck is enough? But in retrospect now, being able to create charities and work for Microsoft, that is because she brought me up that way. And she also had a very good tendency, awareness of knowing she'll drive, and then when to be nurturing and like soft. And at the end of the day, I could always know that I could count on her for a hug or some reassurance. But it sounds like we both had mothers that could see our potential before we could and instilled the value of like, keep fucking pushing.
Yeah. My dad was, he was very respectful. He's all about being respectful. I guess my mum was was the worker. She provided and did that side of it. I think I had a pretty good balance. You talk dysfunction when you're a kid, and I speak to my brothers and sisters and their opinion of what our family was, because I was the oldest and I'd seen it for longer, was a lot different. But
in what way do you reckon?
I just think, I think the younger years really shape you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So from when I was, say, 3 to 12, our family was great. Like, there was no, my dad wasn't really drinking at that stage. I don't have memories of any deterioration of the fabric of our family. But it was sort of after that, and it might have been when my sisters were in that 5 to 12 range, and that's why their opinion of, yeah, it was difficult. Not in like a super negative way, not in an uncaring way. It was more just our parents.
Maybe they saw less stability.
That's probably the stability side of things.
Do you know, and as always, Greg, like, let me know if any of it's like, no, don't go there. And I'm not necessarily interested in the details, but more just your perspective on mental health. Do you know why? I just lost an uncle who died because of liver cancer, because he was an alcoholic. And I watched him over the years, and I know why he turned to the drink. Do you know why your dad turned to the drink?
Well, that was in pain.
Physical or mental?
Physical.
Okay.
He had a motorbike accident when he was 19. A car went through a stop sign and hit him when he was riding his motorbike home from work, and it combusted on impact. So I think it was something like 80% of his body was burnt and scarred, his face.
Wow.
He's in and out of hospital, getting skin grafts and bone, getting pins and stuff in both of his femurs. So for about 18 months. He was sore at the start, and I think as his body was getting older, he was getting sorer. So he used to drink, and then took the edge off, and like everyone, I guess, in that circumstance and those situations, just becomes a habit. It becomes a habit. He moved up to Tamworth, Werris Creek, a little town outside of Tamworth, and I was in Sydney, and he was just doing what he was doing every day. As I said, he wasn't working, so he sort of went into a bit of a spiral, and it is what it is now.
Mm. There's such a big link between physical pain and mental health, because, like, if Western medicine can't treat it, then you go to your own medicine, and often that's not a great path, you know, drugs, alcohol, et cetera. But I couldn't imagine being in that much pain all day and just, like, yearning for some type of relief. Did he ever, when stuff like that, nowhere near as acute, happens to me, I get angry at the world because I'm like, why me? Did he ever do like a why me? Why did I get hit by a car?
Never.
Wow.
Never. I never judged anyone for judging him, which is...
For looking different?
Yeah, because he did look different. People say, like, he looked like Freddy Krueger. He used to have a big Cobra hat, and he'd stand out because he was reasonably tall and a bit bad scar on his face. And I used to get angry.
Defensive on his behalf, yeah.
But he never did.
Wow.
He never did. I never heard him blame anybody, or never heard him talk about what if or making excuses about anything that he missed out on. It was just, that was him, and he was pretty strong in that sense.
It's so easy to become a victim to the situation in times like that.
There it is. There's so many, I see people all the time, in the rugby league world, it's people get injured. And then you see the people sometimes with the worst injuries that aren't spiteful or angry. And it's definitely, I guess, a tough personality to be able to be that way. I just told you about my dog died, so I was blaming every man and everyone I could find. But I think they're pretty tough people that have to live, you know, with, talk about Alex McKinnon, we spoke about it before, like injuries. And I've spoken to Alex a heap of times, and he's very positive, and he's in an awful situation. But yeah, I couldn't say how I'd feel if I was like that. It's horrible that it happens to anyone, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how life has a way of handing some serious shit to, I think, the most shit to the people who can handle it best. I'd like to believe anyway. Now, mental health, whether we call it that term or not, like, I'll ask it as simple as possible and then we can weave our way around it. Do you think you ever experienced a mental health issue like depression or anxiety?
Yeah, definitely. You talk about, I've spoken to doctors and they've suspected that, you know, maybe part bipolar and things like that. And because the highs are high, you enjoy them and you're happy and you're enjoying, you play a game and you go for a drink and everyone's in, you know, real jovial mood.
Mm.
But the lows are really low. And when the football stops and all you don't have those high highs, the low lows seem so much worse. I've definitely had times. Most of it revolved around times when I didn't have football. When I had football, I felt like I was okay, I was balanced. But yeah, the times when football wasn't around, through suspensions or retirement, things like that. Yeah, I think that's when my lows seemed like that was all they were, because I just related so much of my highs to what I'd known my whole life as playing footy.
A lot of your identity as well.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what do some of those lows look like? How do you know you're in a low? What behaviours or feelings come up?
I think it's withdrawn, completely withdrawn.
Pull away from people.
From everybody. I'm not great at it. I talk as a coach now and try to talk to people about how they're feeling. And I've even for me, friends and family, try to be there for everyone. And discuss things and call them. But I don't want to talk to anyone when I'm upset. And you don't see that when you actually say engineering, how you're feeling. You don't see that at the time. Yeah, when I'm down, I'm pretty just jump in my car and drive and park somewhere.
And then what?
Just think.
About?
Getting out of that pain. What's it going to take to stop it?
Where do those thoughts go? Have you ever thought about ending it?
Yeah, I've thought about it, but never thought about actually doing it.
Yeah, it's more like a fleeting fantasy.
When you talk about how are we going to stop this, well, that's one way to stop it, but I never actually thought about going ahead with something like that. But, yeah, it was just, yeah, it's funny. I've heard you speak, when you're down in the hole, you just want to get out of the hole. And sometimes it's a process. Sometimes it's long. It's not pretty much all time. Every time it's long, it's not a click the fingers. But when you're like that, you wish you could just click your fingers.
Fuck yeah. And I know that it might seem like a morbid question to ask and push on, but I just think it's really relatable. that if people see themselves in you, it's going to go a long way. You're withdrawing, that sometimes means getting in the car, driving, having some thinking time. What are some of the thoughts that come up that when you're really low? Is it like self-sabotaging?
No, it wouldn't be self-sabotaging. Loneliness.
Mm.
Loneliness is probably a big one because I don't want to ring anyone. I don't want to burden anyone. And sometimes I wish I could ring someone. And if I rang them, I don't know what I'd say. And then coming back, you talk about your strong identity and image and things like that. I don't want to be a pussy.
Mm.
I don't want to, like, be crying to someone or this and that. But
yeah, do you believe that? Okay, let me ask this another way.
Yeah.
If your mate came to you and said...
But that's what I mean.
But you wouldn't see them as a pussy.
I don't. No.
Yeah, wow.
Like, as my mate, like, if someone's upset, I'll literally sit with them and get them to spit everything out and talk it out. But for me, I would never let anyone do that to me. And when you're on the other, when the shoe's on the other foot, you don't, it doesn't even come into your mind that you wouldn't be that way if you were completely upset. Yeah, it's really strange. I hadn't actually thought about this until you asked me
these fucking questions. A few new insights today, Greggy.
These questions.
It's good.
I've had downs. You know, like, you know, being like getting caught up in legal issues and getting stood down from teams and the...
That's got to hurt. That's
yeah, it does. It hurts the most for me. You know, that knocked me about. You know, when I had issues in Sydney, I pretty much locked myself inside for about a month.
Wow.
I didn't leave. It was like cameras sitting outside my house. And like they were taking photos of me if I went to the window through the crack in the blinds. So it was like, yeah, I don't know, it would have been a month, it might have even been longer than that, 6 weeks. But, yeah, it's...
What happens in that house when you're just by yourself in your thoughts with fucking cameras everywhere? You want to go mental.
Yeah, I'd like watching movies.
Thank God.
And really drifting out of my self.
Yeah.
It's like...
Escaping.
Escaping my thoughts. So, yeah, movies are a good one for me, but... there's not much else to do when you're in an apartment on your own. I had Guitar Hero then.
Yeah.
I got really good at Guitar Hero.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, it's a lot of the tough times and I guess the people don't see rugby, like fans don't see that.
No.
Fans don't see what it means to a player. You know, like some people, maybe they don't care. They don't care if you win or lose. You know, I did care if we lost. So I was always trying to win. And then when it didn't happen and I got stood down or something like that, it was everyone's got an opinion. Everyone sort of says, you should know better. You, what an idiot, throwing things away. It's like, it's all well and good in hindsight.
Mm.
But.
So there's high highs and the low lows. And when the footy's gone, the highs aren't there. So you're left with the lows.
Yeah.
And is there... Was it the camaraderie or the winning or all the above that provided the high?
I think it's probably all of the above, really. It's all of the above. It's the thing that's all you know, really.
Mm.
It's all you know. Like I started playing footy when I was 10 or 11. All I wanted to do in my life was play footy. I had the opportunity to walk out of school straight into the NRL. And then I got to get to 36. And it's like, now you got to go sort of go figure it out.
Mm.
What are you going to do now? And it's not money. It's not about like the pressure of going to get a job or being able to have to pay for your mortgage or to put food on the table. It wasn't that. I had money, I invested, I did okay. It's just purpose.
Mm.
It's fuck purpose. And, you know, you're a dad and your husband and...
You wanted something just for you?
Just want, like, what you had.
Yeah.
But you can't do it anymore because you're old. But, and you got to figure out what you want. And that is hard. You know, every time I talk to players, and when I was a player, I thought, you know, I'll be right. I'll be right. I'll figure it out. And, it does hit you for a bit. It hits a lot of people. I assume it would probably hit everybody in a certain way. It probably didn't hit me the most until I actually left football. So I was coaching for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was okay to coach. Didn't really, it's like I was still in the team. I just wasn't playing.
Mm.
Sitting on the bench. So you get the wins, you get the highs, you get the camaraderie. It was after that, it was when I come back to Australia and played a lot of golf, camaraderie, winning.
Mm.
That's like when you're not just like trying to figure out what you want to do. Just lucky I found something that took me a while, but I found something. Found a couple of things actually.
Yeah, what are they now for you? Where's the highs?
I'm doing business development where I met you.
Yep.
For a company that does connections.
Yep.
For Origin Energy. So that's good. That's my bread and butter. And then that's very salesy, so you getting contracts, you're winning people over, you're winning. Yep. And then the other side is my business, sort of a business me and my cousin come up with. We found a bit of a need for it. We shaped it sort of to be something different from anything else that's out there. We do corporate furniture removal. So there's a lot, I guess, after COVID, there's a lot of people who aren't ever going back to offices. These office towers are basically empty at the moment because even massive corporations don't need to hold people in an office. You don't need to bring them in. You don't need to pay the overheads to run the office. So they're downsizing, and we found a way where we could come in, take the furniture, avoid landfill, and to give that furniture or the money that we made from selling that furniture to community organisations. A lot of them predominantly Indigenous. We're both Indigenous, me and my cousin, and
mm-hmm.
And charities and things like that. And it just
awesome, man.
Gives people an opportunity to get the money. You know, a lot of these places are government funded. A lot of places haven't given good budgets, but they shouldn't be wasting it on furniture, wasting it on desks and chairs and computers. We can get that. They can get that for free,
mm.
and they can put all their time and effort and budget into, you know, helping the community, helping the people out there that can't help themselves as much.
And the name of that company so we can plug it?
Yeah, Project Net Zero.
Project Net Zero. Go look it up, everyone.
It's good. We're working all over the country. So we're on jobs in Perth, Adelaide, Sydney, Brisbane.
Yeah, it's wicked.
And real.
Amazing concept.
Yeah, it's hard work. It's hard work. I think people, a lot of organisations think I'm taking the piss sometimes when you ring them and say, oh, I've got fridge, microwave, desks, chairs, lounges. Do you want them? They're like,
yeah, fuck. What's the catch?
But it's good. It is very rewarding in that sense. To give, it's good to receive, but
yeah,
it feels pretty special when you get the chance to give.
It's almost, I don't know if you say it this way, but you get the winning through your sales role and your camaraderie through your giving role with Project Net Zero. So you've kind of taken two footy needs and plugged them into your private life. Yeah. Sorry, your new professional life.
Yeah, it's good. It's busy, but it's good. And it's purpose. That's what I talked about before.
Does any part of you feel empty?
No. I wouldn't say empty. It's obviously days when it's not great. There's days, things you need to work on, parts of your life where you probably need to focus more attention on.
Mm.
But I wouldn't say empty.
You mentioned that, you know, you don't see people who lean on you as in any way, shape or form less than or weak, but your instinct when you're feeling low is to just run a million miles away from anyone and social interaction.
And feel weak.
And feel weak.
Yeah, it's the hypocrisy is ridiculous.
Yeah, I just want to dig a little bit. I just, not to judge, but just to know the why. Is it that because what's coming up for me right now, I haven't thought this through, but that has been your role in your family system. You were the top link that was kind of holding this everyone together other than your parents. Like you were the oldest of your siblings. Your mum was out doing her thing. Your dad was coping as best he could with his injuries, etc. And so you were kind of keeping the kids on lockdown. You didn't have time to be weak. And then the story repeats itself. When your daughter was born, dad died, nan died, dog died, didn't have time to be weak. It wasn't until right at the end. But what might have happened when your dog died is after the projection of anger, which is understandable, someone might have been able to be let into that window of pain, particularly around your dog. Was that your wife? Was she allowed in?
Yeah.
And what's it like to be vulnerable with her?
Yeah, she's pretty tough. She's a pretty tough lady as well.
Which I'm sure you respect about her as
definitely.
Much. Yeah.
It's definitely. Yeah, she's very independent. She's very tough. And I think she only gives me the support when she knows I really, really need it.
Yep.
Well,
I don't think you'd take it if it wasn't that extreme.
She sort of doesn't feel the need to be super supportive on everyday things. And she runs the house. She tells me what to do and tells us, you know, keeps everyone in line and keeps everything flowing. So I think we got a good system. But yeah, she's definitely great for me. Mm. She makes me want to be better. I said it in my wedding speech.
That's beautiful.
She makes me want to be better because it's no secret that I've played up a few times over the years with the law and things like that. So it's good to have, you know, someone there that's like her that isn't afraid to crack the whip. And,
on
the other side of the coin, she can sort of pick me up when she knows I'm really down.
And is there anything that she does when you do need that kind of deeper support that helps a lot? Is it just a hug or is it a reassuring word or what is it about her, do you think?
It's usually the word, the spoken word. It's something that works for me. Yeah, those words of affirmation, as they say.
Yeah.
It's something that works good for me, and then on the other hand, something that works probably the worst for me when it's negative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's, she knows that.
Do you and your wife usually, if say, for example, you're having a hard period and you do lean on her or open up to her, which might feel uncomfortable for you at first, do you guys get closer as a result of that?
I think we do when we work together at something.
Mm.
And I think when I do open up a little bit, even if it's something about the business or something's not going good in the business and I talk to her about it, she's actually interested and talks back and then I feel like you bond over finding a solution.
Yep.
She's working in the business now as well, helping out.
Cool.
So it's good to actually to have her right there to, I guess, so you can share in the wins and then, you know, have teamwork when it comes to working on the tough stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
Was it hard? I mean, I know the answer to this is yes. So let me rephrase that so it's not a boring, obvious, stupid question. Like I'm sure you've got a lot in the media in the past. Being in the public eye and shit going down, does that just pour gasoline on any existing mental health issue?
Yeah, I think it does, especially the way I've dealt with situations is not wanting to be around people when all they want to do is stick a camera in your face, which is sort of gasoline when you want to isolate. But, yeah, it's hard. And it's so much harder now. Like, it's 10 times harder now than it was when I was playing. The social media aspect of rugby league, sport, or anything, people can say whatever they want. And someone like me, I used to get upset when people said stuff. I grew thick skin in the end, and it didn't bother me that if someone abused me on social media, tell them to go fuck themselves. everyone says don't do it, just delete it or block them. I was like, fuck that guy. he needs to know. Yeah. He needs to know that I'm not his bitch.
And yeah.
Can't speak to me if he spoke like that in the street.
I'd punch
him in the face.
Yeah. There's no way they'd say that in person.
But that's the world we live in now, and it's sad that because not everyone's like me. Not everyone could say fuck you. They can pent it up and then it comes out in other ways. It comes out, you're better than anyone, the amount of suicide and things like that. I think when people are in the media, in the social eye, especially rugby league players, the highs are high and the lows are low. It's never just me that had those feelings on you. I know that I'm naive to that, but it's something that I don't think the public understands as much.
Mm.
I don't think they realise the negative comments and the harsh things
how much of an effect
it can have on people. They're rugby league players, they're men, they're masculine, they're strong, they have images that they want to uphold. Like me, I'm a perfect example. I want to let anyone break that down and you react.
Mm.
And, that happens all the time. People react and they're getting fined or getting suspended or going to court, things like that. It's sad.
Well, just on that word, I know it's a buzzword, but like masculinity, what does masculinity mean to you? Like a healthy version of it? Someone who competes hard, but also has enough self-awareness to be able to be kind to the people around you. That's my guess about your...
Yeah. Well, masculinity... Masculine for me is just be a man. Like a man, do weights, be friendly, be healthy. That's masculinity to me. It's not be... over domineering or something like that. It's more being friendly, friendly in that environment. Masculine, it's like being in a team. You can't be a dick in a team. Dicks get found out in teams pretty quickly.
Yeah, fucking hell. Well, what's your opinion on why men are experiencing this? I can tell you from a psychology perspective, but putting that aside, I want to know Greg's opinion on why you think men are struggling so much with their mental health.
That's exactly that. Like, it's exactly that. It's the masculinity. It's the shame of being, the shame of showing weakness for me. And that's exactly why I didn't want to talk to anyone. But I'd always be happy to be a shoulder to cry on for someone else. It doesn't make any fucking sense. But, it's showing weakness. It's losing. It's something that I guess you don't want to let people know that you have.
Why do you think you were comfortable coming here today to talk to me about some of this stuff if you see it as weak and losing?
I don't know, because I guess I'm not in the hole at the moment.
Mm.
So I feel good at the moment.
Yeah, it's easy to talk about past tense then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If I wasn't a hole, I probably wouldn't be able to.
You'd be like, sorry, Mitch.
Sorry, bro. I'm having a rough week.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It's you know, people talk about all the time. I heard your story, man, and I really enjoyed it. You know, to go from the highest highs, you know, yeah, I'm making, you know, good money, you know, over in America, like major role, but to have all that shit going on the inside that no one knew about, that's a world that I won't say I was anything where you were, but I saw bits of that.
Yeah.
I saw bits of that. So, when he asked me to come down, I was like, I know that other people see it as well. You know, no one's perfect. I know no one, again, like we say, no one wants to show weakness and no one wants to say it, but I think hearing weakness every now and again makes you feel a little bit more comfortable in your own.
Yeah, the only thing I'll substitute is the word weakness to realness.
Oh, realness, yeah.
Because weakness, I think, is more of a subjective term. It's a choice on how you view it, but right here, right now, you being real with me doesn't feel weak. That's my personal reflection.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I'd be interested in asking you, actually, as you're sitting here talking to me, do you feel weak?
No.
That's curious. You're being real, but yeah. It doesn't feel less than.
No, definitely not. But as I said again, when you're in that hole, that's where you're feeling the worst.
Yeah, it becomes gospel that you are weak if for feeling this in the first place, let alone making it someone else's problem.
Exactly. Exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm very appreciative, and I know many people would feel the same, that you have opened up a little bit, and I think that's a fucking strong thing to do. And honestly, the biggest reason why is because we fucking need men like you coming forward and saying this stuff, because we're losing a shit ton of them. And we want people to know that it is fucking okay to have these thoughts and to experience these lows, because I for me personally, the loneliness, the disconnection, the shame was 10 times worse than the depression and the anxiety and stuff. And that part's controllable by just doing stuff like this, you know. And loneliness is more than just having people around. It's having people who understand you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely, it's having that connection, to be able to, I guess, relate to someone else who's feeling the same or who has felt the same before.
Do your mates check in on you?
No.
Because they know that you wouldn't buy a bite on it?
No, like I've never really spoken about this. Like, I legitimately don't think I've ever spoken about this to this extent anyway. So, yeah.
So they wouldn't even know there's something to be checked in on?
Yeah, basically.
Because if there was ever something that might alert them, you withdraw and make sure that there's no evidence. No,
exactly. Exactly.
So we're blowing your cover right now, Greg.
Probably, but yeah, mate. Like my mates have checked in on me, like over the years. You know, when it's all over the front page of the paper, they got a pretty good idea that I'm not going too good.
Yeah,
my family do the same. But you know, I check in on my mates. It's weird when you finish rugby league. When you got to train them together every day, then you finish and you don't see anyone at all, or see them rarely or occasionally. It's so easy to just get on the phone and give them a ring, but you just don't. You just don't ring people or speak to people as much and reach out and say, how you doing?
Because life happens.
You got other stuff on your mind, and they're not at the forefront because you don't see them all the time. So I think it's something that I try to do more. I've done it more over the years, ringing people, saying, g'day, blokes I haven't played with for a while, or blokes that I've had good relationships with when I play footy, just give them a ring and say g'day, see how they're going. Because, you know, they might not call you. And then if they don't call you, you don't speak to them. You know, you basically
drift. Yeah.
So, yeah, no one wants to be the first person to call, but everyone enjoys gapping the conversation. So sometimes that person's got to be me, which is what's good with me, to be honest.
What are a couple of things you do now, Greggy, where you're like, yep, I can hang my hat on this as something that helps me dig out of the low holes? Exercise, I imagine.
Exercise is good.
Yeah.
Training's good. Alcohol's good. It's very not healthy. I know that.
Probably a short-term release. Yeah, short-term.
Alcohol's a good. It's not good, but it's good at the time. Just being busy, man.
Distract.
Being busy, yeah. Just putting all my time into, you know, like I work during the day and I sit up and do hours at night on the computer and making sure reports are done and making sure emails are sent and all emails have been answered on jobs and charities and this and that we've worked in between, facilitated.
Yep.
So that keeps me occupied. It keeps me working towards the greater good and keeping on the right track.
Yeah. So exercise, purpose, work, obviously family, of course.
I don't think it's just work.
Say more.
I think you got to be doing something you want to do.
Mm.
Like I enjoy what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I can tell.
Like we built that. Like something that we built. So I feel like I've got some own, like it's mine, it's like a child.
Yep.
But you know, work's not purpose, work's work. Your purpose is something that you're passionate about. I think doing something that's works for you as well. You know, digging a hole if you're not, it's not really what you want to do or something you don't enjoy or probably not something that you could class as something that's going to bring you up and make you feel better about your situation. I think maybe you just got to find something that works for you, which is probably not easy.
Yeah, it's not. I see a lot of young men actually who are feeling very lost. And I think, you know, men have their best mental health when they've got a goal and they're task oriented and we can achieve, because it makes us feel like we're protecting, providing, adding value, which is really key to our psyche and our mental health. But when, I'm not saying that's exclusive for men, obviously that helps for women too, but for young men, it seems to be a big thing. There's a certain feeling of lostness that's quite pervasive. Like there's got to be more, and the emptiness that comes from not following a purpose is usually found in drink or drugs, because there's something missing. And if you can't, my opinion is, if you can't find purpose in your work necessarily, you have to find it somewhere, whether that be in a cause that you care about, the relationships you're invested in and the people you're caring for. Because very quickly, if that hole is left unattended, it will be attended to for you with stuff that's not good.
Mm.
And what would you say, like, what's a message that you could give to younger men at the moment who are struggling with their mental health?
I don't know, man.
It doesn't need to be profound.
I really don't know. I think just lean on your mates.
Are we listening to this?
I know. I know that. I know if I did do that, it would be much easier. And I do that. Like I have mates. I got mates that I ring.
Yeah.
But like good mates. Like I've got some of my best mates that I'd ring if I was feeling shitty. They're not here. So that's when I say withdraw. I withdraw from here.
Wait, say more about they're not here.
No, oh, they're just like in Sydney or...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're not passed away or anything.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're in Sydney or Newcastle or Melbourne or things like that. People I can talk to about. People who have played football. People who I feel that know the situations that can sort of...
Relate,
yeah. At all levels. Yeah. It's a bit different around here.
Does in-person chats feel like more helpful to you than on the phone when you're in those moments?
No, not. I actually probably prefer like on the phone.
Mm.
Yeah, I prefer on the phone. I don't know whether it's because there's no one around here that's sort of, like, there are, I've got good mates here.
Of course.
But you just don't want to burden, that I wouldn't burden those guys, where I'm happy to burden my best mates.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm happy to burden them. And they, you know, fuck them.
Yeah. In the best way possible. Yeah. This is Australia.
Yeah.
Fuck them, mate, is the biggest compliment you can give.
Fuck them, guys. I don't mind making, putting my shit on them. But, yeah. You don't want to, you don't want to burden people, like I said, like we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mate, I really enjoyed this chat and I feel, honoured that you felt comfortable enough to want to even walk down this path a little bit, sharing some of your story and wearing your heart on your sleeve in service to, like, this isn't just for you. I would say it's the least for you. You probably had reservations in doing this because there's nothing you're quote unquote gaining. If anything, this is moving into a situation where you might feel less powerful or weak, to use your words, but the fact that you still came and still had a chat shows a lot about your character, and deep down you know that this is going to help other people, and so thank you on behalf of everyone that you've let us into a little window of your life.
Yeah, man, I give my time to anyone. It doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
And for someone like yourself who's out there fighting the good fight and mental health and trying to help people, I'm happy to sit down with you and have a chat, for sure.
Thanks, Brazzy. So three final questions. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
It's a funny one. I can never remember when I'm asked. My dad always used to say something. I don't know whether this is productive. He always, there's something that always sticks in my head. He's never start a fight, but always finish one. And I just never go looking for trouble.
Yeah.
But if it comes to you, make sure you're ready for it.
First of all, I love that quote because I agree. Yeah. And I would live my life the same. I wouldn't start a fight, but I would happily support my friends if they're in one or if someone hit on my missus or whatever. But I just, that's the most Greg Bird quote ever, you know?
It probably is.
It's so good.
It's just in my head.
Yeah. No, deep down it has the right sentiment, which is be kind to people, but also don't be a pushover.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't put it in those exact words to my daughters.
Yeah.
But don't let kids bully you.
Yeah, amen.
Things like that.
Amen. Yeah. Bit of a weird one. If you were to have a billboard, let's say, for example, above the M5 in Sydney, and you could write one sentence on it, would it be that sentence?
No, it'd probably be a little bit, just be kind. Just be kind.
Yep.
Two words, be kind.
Nice.
There's so many fucking dicks out there.
Yeah.
That just want to, put shit on people.
Tear them down.
Tear people down. And like you get on Instagram and you just get on any photo. You get on any photo and open the comments up and go down and look at them and you're just like, there's so much bullshit.
Yeah.
It's just people just riding everyone
up. So fucked, isn't it?
Yeah. Like so many people just abusing people for no reason.
I can't believe it.
Like the mem pages where these people don't even know these people, but they're just form an opinion and they're just writing them off. And it's like, I just can't get involved in that shit.
I actually can't believe it when I go into the comment section. I'm like, you have put your name and face to this comment.
Yeah.
When you were writing that, how did you expect people were going to react? Be like, oh, so true.
People have burner accounts. Like, you look at some of these comments and they're not even like, an account, they're nobody, they're a faceless person,
true.
A faceless, nameless piece of shit.
Just to project and make people feel bad.
They just want to put hate out there. It's fucking awful.
Yeah, it is.
Be kind.
Be kind. And is there any question that you wish I'd asked and or want to reflect on that I didn't?
No, I think you got pretty much everything out of me. You got more out of me than I thought I had.
It's good.
So, yeah, no, it's good, man. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Greggy.
Thank you very
much. Appreciate it, my friend.
Cheers.
My emotions have a natural tendency to dissipate unless they get reinforced. And so if there's more thoughts, more stories, more intentions come along. So the act of how am I leaving it alone is an act of not adding more stories, adding fuel to it. So it might not go away in 2 minutes, but then it begins to relax and dissipate. And so rather than being the person who has to fix it, we become the person who makes space for the heart, the mind, to relax and settle away itself.